Welcome to the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, OuterLimitsRadio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. This is the Death Show, part 2 of 5. This is the one that features the Virtues, and the Virtues are the special ops team of the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. They are comprised of psychic medium Carrie O'Connor, angel reader and past life reader Laura Lynn, psychic empath Miss Lisa Kaza, and the astrophenom, the astrologer, Miss Constance Ellis. These four individuals have incredible insight, and they've been with the show since the inception back in 2014. So they're all going to offer their insight on death. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time in this five-part series, I want to just emphasize that this show is dedicated to every person out there who lost someone close to them, who's mourning. We really, really hope that this show can bring you some measure of peace and comfort and help you find some of the answers that you're looking for. This show is also dedicated, again, to Lisa Mack, to Carrie, to Patton Oswalt, and my close friend Dave. And I decided that with every part that we do of the show, I'm going to tell another Dave story. So here's a Dave story for you. Dave prepared me for marriage because I never met anyone spend as much time in the bathroom fixing their hair and making themselves look all pretty than Dave. I think my wife spent about an eighth of the time in the bathroom that Dave. When Dave would walk around, he would always be looking for a mirror, always checking himself. And I think that if Dave was a professional wrestler, the matches would start like this.
Starting in this corner, we have the big bad missing link. And in this corner, we have his opponent, Dave.
I feel pretty. Oh, so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and bright. And
we'd have that music as he's kind of strutting down the aisle looking in a mirror. But Dave's a good guy, and if he's sticking with us right now, here we go with part 2 of the Death Show, a discussion with the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show Virtues.
Joining us now is the Queen of the Universe, globally respected psychic medium and Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show Virtue, Miss Carrie O'Connor. You can learn more about Miss Carrie O'Connor and get a reading with Miss Carrie O'Connor by going to her website at carrieoconnor.com. Miss O'Connor, our focus of today is about death. It's about experiencing what happens when we pass. From your perspective, from somebody who's been seeing visuals since you were a child, what do you observe visually occurring when a person dies? Is there some typical visuals, or does it vary based on what kind of life that they lived?
There's a theme that goes on, Ryan, and but everyone's unique, right? But overlaying theme is that imagine the person, it looks like they unzip from their physical body, and then their physical body looks like it drops in the floor like a cloth that you are wearing, a robe, right? And as soon as that physical, the denseness of the physical body starts, it goes on the floor, the person realizes that they're still alive, right? They're like, hey, wait a minute, I'm not dead. I'm eternal, I'm immortal, I'm still alive. And not only do they feel more alive, but they can feel lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter, right? And if they made peace with the death process when they went over, they are literally a magnetic pull. There's like tubes that come out that have a pull that people say, that came back from near-death experiences, that they were blinded by the light and they saw all the relatives coming in. So you can have that experience. You could have guides and angels coming in. You could have pets coming in. It really is unique to you, because if pets are going to help you get through and take that next step into the spiritual levels, they know kind of where the direction to go into. Other times people reconnect with other relatives. Other times people bypass relatives and that just go right up to, it looks like a very high level where they see ascended masters or guides or that kind of thing. So it is unique to everybody as far as the death process. What we resist persists. So let's say somebody came in and they didn't believe in anything. I see this a lot with like elderly men that really felt like you die, you come in here, you live, and then you die, and then you go back to the ground, right? And then their face is the deer in the headlight. It's like when they zip from the physical body, and they not only feel lighter, they feel younger and like more in their prime because their energy is spinning. And again, the physical body could all of a sudden seem very, very dense, where they could feel like they really get expanded and look down at the physical body, and they said, how did I ever fit in that physical body, right? And so the deer in the headlights, when people didn't have any idea on what to expect on the other side, when they first originally do the deer in the headlights, they have two options. They can stay there where that would be, they would be considered more earthbound, right? And earthbound people could be afraid to go ahead because they're attached to earthly things, their house, their money. You know, some people, this is my house, this is my money. I don't care if I'm, you know, dead. Still going to be around it. That's when you see the hauntings, you know. And other people, it's a fear of the life review, what's going to happen, because that is the next stage of it, is that when you go through there and then deeper in your life, I mean, your the process that you go into, you go for a life review. And that's where you don't watch it like a movie where you're seeing every single experience that happened to you. You're feeling it. So let's say you were abused by the father. You see the father, when he dies, he will go over there and then he'll see how he'll feel how you felt. And let's say the father abuses power, was very abusive, alcoholic, and he would slam down the stairs, feet by fofum, and the child would be in the corner just waiting for the abuse to happen. He would feel it firsthand.
Wow.
You felt, right? So it's, again, it's not like a lot of people think you're watching a movie and that you could feel, yes, bad, that then that child was so beaten down by the abuse that it affected their future relationships, it affected how they lived in life. They always had to be on guard because they had abuse at a young age. It's very different when you're feeling it and you're feeling the pit in your stomach of the feet coming down, that the terror that the child felt, you know, that's very different.
So you experience every action that you pushed upon someone?
Yes. Yes, you do.
Okay. So people who are cruel, who are sadistic, especially with animals, they experience the same pain that they've inflicted on the animals?
Yes. And, you know, that's why, Ryan, I've had a lot of clients to say, let's say they had a mother-in-law, ex-mother-in-law, that they blamed, that she destroyed my marriage, and she was a witchy, bitchy person, and I can't wait, you know, I want to see her get her getting around, you know, karma coming around, goes around, and they want to see it in person. One thing I always encourage them to say that if they didn't learn, and hopefully a person did learn about forgiveness here and letting go and really taking in the forgiveness of the mother-in-law, because the forgiveness is going to set that ex-daughter-in-law free, right? But if they didn't, then we experience it over there, right? So the more we do the work here, the less we have to do it over there, right? And if we had no accountability of how we directed our life force or God force, and then we go over there, we have our life review, I've seen people come out of it and they look very, very ragged. It looks like their hair is all like electrically on end, and that they just look like kind of like they were really shooken up. And I know that they had a tough life review, because we have to take accountability, responsibility. We not only feel, see, sense everything that happened. If you abused a dog, all of a sudden you're inside the dog and you see the eyes of the abuser coming toward you, and it's through your eyes, right? So there's really not getting away from anything. That's the beauty of karma. We don't have to worry about it. There's a divine order, and energy takes care of itself. Karma takes care of itself, right? And then there's other people that went in life reviews, and they kind of came out like, phew, it wasn't that bad, right?
Jeez.
Learn something. They might learn, like my grandmother in particular, my mom's dad, my dad's mom, she really came back fast to say, I want to erase the patterns that I sent down to all of you 23 grandchildren about how you felt about money, because she really gave us the message that money was the root of all evil. You can't be holy or good and have money. And that comes from generations. It comes from different religions. And it's a seed. It's a thought that could be planted in the energy field. And it's not like you have to sit around the dinner table and talk about it every night. But it can profoundly affect how you affect your dealings with money. Then throw on that, again, some religious things. So when my grandmother came back, it looks like she went over to this chalkboard. This is my symbol. And she wanted to erase, especially the patterns that she handed down to her kids and her grandchildren about the thoughts of money. She really wants to say money is an exchange of energy. Money is not evil. It does not make you good or bad. It's an exchange of energy. What you do with it, you know, is another story. But money is energy like everything else in the universe is energy. So that's when people come out and they immediately go into, because they have like a clearer view. Think of when we're in our physical bodies, we usually have tunnel vision, and we only really see the tree. Part of our journey here is to be able to see the forest and see the tree at the same time. That tunnel vision will block us from having experiences of all sorts, from literally experiencing the world as a multi-universe, the energies that are around us, be able to get information from the trees, from the rocks. There's always communication that's constantly going on. So they leave their life review. Again, that's an opportunity for them to forgive themselves. And it's not like angels and guides are standing there with their check sheet and saying, okay, check, 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 you cried enough or you did this, you know. They're really the journey of it, much like an ayahuasca journey. When you take the going on an ayahuasca journey, it ends up you having to set yourself free. It's like forgiving of yourself, right? There's the old saying, we do better when we know better. And it truly is. When we know better, we do better. So that's the life review, gives us a lot of opportunity to do some major healing. And then that is able to literally clear out generational patterns that have been handed down, right? So that's the person's job on the other side. You could say that, especially if they put a pattern that was really blocked generations. Like life has to do with the struggle, sacrifice. The bad guys finish last, you know? And so the people think that you have to struggle in life, and the more you struggle, the more you're being good, and you'll get a better place in heaven. That's not necessarily true. The first thing that they say is get rid of that thought pattern that life has to be a struggle and sacrifice, and that the suffering isn't doing anybody good. Yeah.
When you have a life review and you experience directly the pain or suffering that you've infringed upon someone or you've punished someone with, why would you then have to come back for other lifetimes to experience being murdered or being suffering if you've already experienced it in the past life and during the life review? If you've experienced action, reaction, experienced the direct result, reaction, why would you have to come back in another life, future life, to experience that?
Well, that's a really good question, Ryan. It goes back to if the person comes full, complete circle where they take accountability of what they did, forgive themselves, forgive others, and then it looks like the person does like this 360-degree turn where they take total accountability, so that means they don't necessarily have to go back and have to experience that. If they don't take accountability, it's like they it's almost like they tip their test the waters, or they dip their toes in accountability and say, yeah, I can understand this, or I forgive a little bit of this, but then consciously or unconsciously, they still have a lot of forgiveness to work on, and it could be from lifetimes and lifetimes. Then the person could come back and have to learn about forgiveness again, right? When we go over there and we consciously say, I'm going to, it's like nip it in the bud. I want to pull this up by the root, like with the block that has been blocking us in this holding pattern that keeps us for generations in a thought form that leads us to mind, money, body, and duality. When we get to the root cause of it, we can have a profound release where it's like a pathway that was in front of you of this is how you're going to learn again, and you're going to have to come back around and learn about how not to misuse your power, and how where what started you as the thought form that you could misuse power and abuse of power, that kind of thing. So if you take, again, full accountability. We don't get away with anything over there. Again, if we can't do it with our fingers crossed behind our back and saying, I forgive everybody, I'm asking for forgiveness, and I take total accountability, and then we're totally not aligned to it. This is real, full body, mind, and soul accountability and responsibility.
Okay. And also, in a part of the life review, understanding is that sometimes we come and we incarnate in a family group, soul group, or nation group, and our karma may be aligned with that family, with that nation.
Absolutely.
If our family or nation is creating harm to others, are we going to experience the pain and suffering of the collective family or the collective nation upon our soul review? Because if we've pledged allegiance to a nation or family, and we've pledged our loyalty to that, are we held accountable for our loyalty, regardless if that nation or family is bestowing peace or bestowing pain upon others?
Right. Excellent question. The way I see it is that if the person went over there and then all of a sudden they see a bigger view with it, right? So they get the tunnel vision off, and then they have an opportunity to take full accountability and responsibility that there's – we can be like the sheeple people, Ryan, where Stuart always said the word sheeple – where we just do the right thing or what the government expects of us, with our family, that just society. And if we just do it in kind of like the time to make the donuts thing, and we're just following along, it's almost like we don't have our life for free will in a way, right? We're just doing what was expected from us. If we go there and we're born into an area that we're not totally connected to, or that we wake up and we have some awareness that's saying, wait a minute, this is an abuse of power. This isn't an empowerment energy. This isn't a misuse of energy. So even though you could been born in that grid, in that country that had misuse of power, and you say, I'm unplugging from that, and you're working on unplugging from it and forgiving yourself from it, where anytime you could have misused power, right, then you're going to, in your life review, not have to go through it versus the people that got their jollies out of misuse of power. Think of the Hitler soldiers that they were told what to do. Some of them did it as sheeples. They were ordered, they did what they did, and they had to almost disconnect from their heart to be able to doing torturous, horrific things to another human being. Others of them got turned on by it. It was like they loved it. It was a power-hungry thing, right? So the ones that got turned on to it and that really liked it and misused their power, they would have much more of an opportunity to also get the karmic things that the country has. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
It makes total sense about it. When we are in waking reality in our physical body, I would imagine that at some point we would be limited by our ability to think because of the way our brain functions. Somebody could have experienced depression. Somebody could be bipolar. Somebody could be in a not healthy frame of being just because of the health of the physical brain.
Mm-hmm.
When they die, when they're no longer attached to the physical, does their thinking become crystal clear? Will they be able to make the best decision possible without having their brain there? Or will their decision-making process be in alignment to their brain, which is no longer physically alive but still has the thought process that was affected by ailments that were found within the brain at the time they were alive?
Okay. That's a really good question, too. The way I see it is that you can have people, and I've had people that committed suicide and that they were bipolar and really almost not in charge of the way they directed the life force because of an illness, right? They're the ones that are most likely to go through the death process and the life review process and take accountability so they can feel more whole and free. I've had people that were so, so sick, Ryan. They've had bipolar their whole life, depression, and just getting up every single day and just existing was their journey in life. And so, in part of their bigger message was to help the people around them to experience compassion and all of that kind of stuff. I have a sister who's bipolar, and I understand this one personally. So I know that the more she is able to work on healing herself, heal the energy when she gets out of the physical body, she can it almost looks like she gets to go to the front of the class in spirit school of how to learn to navigate over there, because she realizes that part of the disease, she came in with the learning experience of disease, just like when kids could come in with mental retardation, Down syndrome, AIDS, you know, that they knew when they were coming in that that was going to be the body that they were picking up, a physical disease. The same thing is with mental disease, right? And so, and let's say you have the person that is still, even though they get out of the physical body, they're still very much scattered in that they are kind of all over the place and, again, not having any kind of accountability or responsibility. They can go through the school where it seems like they go slower, like they end up in the back of the class and then they don't jump and take leaps like the other ones do. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. And say, for example, you pass, upon death, when you die, after you go through that past life, after you go through your life review, is that the moment where the soul of that particular lifetime will choose to go to a realm either aligned with heaven or a hell-like state?
Well, sometimes it could happen before, because if they stay in the earthbound moment that they are, as far as I'm concerned, in like a hellish dimension, right? Because they know that they're still alive and they're not in that lighter energy. So that could be very feeling like a hellish way. I'm doing air quotes here, right? And other times after they finish the life review, when you get out of there, it's not like, okay, you guys go over there and you guys go over here. You know what I mean? The ones that life reviews, you've got an A-plus with it and you got the front of the class, that you automatically go into the group that was in the beginning of the class and having, again, to me it looks like a full circle. They can decide, it's like then they go through this process, let's say, to the first schooling is almost like kindergarten, so we learned how to navigate over there, take accountability and responsibility, unplug from our parents, understand, asking the big questions. Why did I choose as parents? Why did I choose to grow up in poor, black, transgender, all these things? And so as we graduate from that school, then we go to a different school where it's like we start reconnecting with our multidimensional self. So we start understanding the history of the universe, you could say. We start connecting with our higher aspects, you know. So you start meeting the times, and it could be literally you in a past life where you were a healer, let's say, or a shaman, and you really got a place of ascension, and you've understood it, and you felt whole. And then you're able to see it, again, not as a movie, you start incorporating it. It's like making stronger connections with that aspect of yourself. Other times we make stronger connections with, like, the universal mother or the universal energy, which, again, allows us to heal ourselves and see ourselves as multidimensional beings. When we come in this earth form, think all around us. It looks like comic strip balls to me. And inside those balls are stories and experience. They look like video clips. And when anybody's carrying their parents, grandparents, be it they're dead or alive, and generations around them in their dramas and traumas, when they get out of the physical body, they have a huge opportunity to step away from that, those stories that keep us in holding patterns and duality, right? And if they do step away and then they start connecting to their multidimensional selves, right, they start connecting to those lighter aspects of us, then everything changes. It's like they get... Again, it's they rotate out of another level of duality, you could say, or they go up in a spiritual dimension that's a higher vibration, and we start seeing things at a very different place. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does make sense. And if a person has a very strong belief, regardless of organization, you believe something is a sin, and you have engaged in that activity. Say, for example, writing your name on a sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. You consider that to be a sin. In some organized form, mm-hmm. that is a sin, a horrible sin. You believe that is a sin. You die. Mm-hmm. Do you believe or thrust yourself into a hellish dimension because you believe wholeheartedly that what you did was an act or a horrible thing to do? I'm just kind of – what I'm getting at is I'm wondering –
Yeah.
The human mind apparently is very powerful. The patterns of belief are very powerful. If you believe something is true and you are part of that God force, all yeah. divine spark, does it make it true?
Yes, it can in a way. That's where you go into the different schools, right? So the kindergarten okay. through pre-K state school, we learn to navigate. We learn the ABCs, right? Then when you start to go in the second level, you could say that you start connecting to those higher aspects of ourselves. Some people don't connect to it. They stay... Again, hovering in that beginning school level. When you go into the part when you're doing exactly what you're talking about, where it's like you have a belief system where, again, the root is money is the root of all evil, and that it is so ingrained with you, and that you had money. If your beliefs, right, are so strong that it's like double layered, you believe it personally. It's part of your own personal karma. It's part of the patterns that were handed down to you from generations. The person. When you go back to the ABC school, that's when they're going to want to drop those sins. Do you know what I mean? They're going to have an opportunity to look at the sin in a different way. Is money a sin? No. Money is energy as everything else is energy, and the whole universe is energy. When you come down to it and keep it very simple, and yes, people can do good stuff with money. They could do not too good stuff with money. They could miss it, abuse it. But is money in itself a sin? No. But if the person holds... Oh my gosh, money is sin. I can't be holy, and I won't be able to get to a higher state in heaven because I made money. That's going to keep the person in a holding pattern until they really see everything and realize that money is energy. And no, it's the thoughts and belief systems that kept me in this holding pattern. And as soon as we have that recognition, we could, again, rotate out of that, Brian. We could just unpull the direction of where we're it's like a tube that's connecting us to it and keeping us in that holding pattern. And by our awareness, we unplug from that and we ground the energy, and then we ground in the new information that money is energy. And so then the likelihood of that person having to go back and experience the sin of money, they're not going to have to, because they changed over there. They shifted. They rotated out of that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes total sense. And final question I have for you, Ms. O'Connor, is this. You see a lot of people who come to you because they're, you know, they're in pain, they're suffering, they want to connect with somebody who's departed, or, you know, just the pain of death is awful.
Right.
What are some of the things that you, you've done or do to bring consolation to them, or things that they can actually do to console themselves?
Well, the first thing I tell everybody is that the grief process is, it goes in different stages. You know, they always talk about the nine grief stages and disease and grief process. And there's a shamanistic term called holding space. And so that's when you open up your heart. It's an energetic posture. You come from that heart space. You truly are listening to the person. It's like you're the sounding board. You're not bored. You're not listening and just waiting for a space so then you could add your two cents in. You're really allowing the person to speak, to grieve. And the grieving process, again, is very different for everybody. The stages, denial, betrayal, anger, rage, and I encourage them to go through the process, not to, sometimes there are people in the New Age area, they feel like they have to bypass death, like they have to go through it very quickly, and that they, it's like a spiritual bypass, so they don't let their bodies go through the pain that they experience when they experience death of somebody close. But it's still stored in their energy body, right? And so we want to recognize that it's different from everybody, so don't judge anybody else. A lot of people, when you lose a child, the divorce rate goes up to 85% that you are going to get a divorce after loss of a child. And the most reason is the divorce is because two people are processing grief differently, right? And so it's, I encourage them not to say, you should be doing this, you know. When my cousin died, my aunt was a psychotherapist, and she joined groups that that lost children early, and she was very vocal about it. My uncle had to process it by writing and being by himself and kind of processing it, and then he'd speak about it. And she had enough of training in psychotherapy where she didn't say, Jim, you have to go to these meetings with me. You have to come to these groups, and that's the way you're going to heal, because that was good for her, but that's not good, wasn't good for my uncle. His writing and processing and that was the way that he went through the grief process, right? So the first thing I encourage is, especially when it's a family, everyone's grief process is their own. Don't judge it. Let yourself go through it. And like a running water where we don't want to spiritual bypass it and repress it so it just builds up later. And then, you know, you have the people where they somebody died close to them, they are back at work 2 days later because they said they can't, you know, be at home and be around because it's like catching up with the grief, right? And then all of a sudden, 3 years later, they lose their friend's cat, and all of a sudden they're bombarded by the loss of their parents because they did not go through the whole process. So understanding, A, that it's a process. B, again, honoring it. Everyone has their own process, in that it could come in levels and layers. The denial, the betrayal, the anger, the sadness, and the acceptance is all very, very real. Holding space for the person, let them speak, not saying, oh, my gosh, you have lost your son 4 years ago. You should be out of this. You know how many people say that to people? You should be way beyond this, you know?
Yeah.
Also recognizing that people, and I advocate this for the animals, that I've heard so many people, I've had clients that were almost suicidal because the loss of their animal that was a child to them. It was a partner. It was like a twin flame relationship, partner-child. And then people come in and say, it was just a dog or a cat. You just could get another one, right? It's like putting a knife in the person's heart. So
Bad
people say to me, my God, I had this one guy crying because he felt that I gave him permission to mourn as deep as he was with his loss of his animal and to get into groups that support the mourn of the animal, and it's just not just an animal. It was a lover. It was a huge aspect of his life. So that's the holding space, giving people permission, because that then allows us to get less staticky. Whenever we're in grief, think of our energy body gets very, very staticky. Think of being able to connect and make communication with them. It goes back to a radio station analogy. the more we are staticky, the more static communication we'll get. And we want to, as we go through the grief process and we get less static out of our energy station, then we can connect to their stations, right, in a clear, concise way.
Miss Carrie O'Connor, Queen of the Universe.
All right.
And whoever respected psychic medium, we love her on the Out of Limits Infinity Radio Show. Can learn more about Miss Carrie O'Connor and get a reading with Miss Carrie O'Connor by going to her website at carrieoconnor.com. Thank you so much, Miss O'Connor.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure. I love you.
Joining us now is the Astrophenom, the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Astrologer and Virtue, Miss Constance Stellas. To learn more about Miss Constance Stellas and to get a chart reading with Miss Constance Stellas, please go to our website at ConstanceStellas.com. Okay, Miss Stellas, our focus of today is on death and the birth and life and death cycle. When a person is born, what can you glean about what that person is going to experience in their life just based on the time and location,
right,
from an astrological chart perspective?
Sure. First of all, there's two things you can be certain of. They're born and they're going to die.
Okay?
So there's a silly joke, but I think it is important to note that the time, place, and circumstances of birth are made by the soul in consultation, let's say, with higher wisdom. That's maybe the best way to put it. So, in other words, you choose your parents. I know a lot of people are going to say, oh my God, I have just screwed myself royally. But you choose your family circumstances, and you choose the circumstances of many things in your life, not because you say, oh boy, this is going to be a good one, I'm going to be rich and famous. I mean, that could be, but it's the soul's choice to learn something spiritually, to evolve. And this can be a very easy life, it can be a very difficult life, or a combination of the two, which is usually the more likely scenario. When a child is born, first of all, when a child is conceived, it is different from when the spirit enters the kind of protoplasm of the child. It's called quickening, and it takes 9 months, as we know, and then the child gets ready to come into this sphere. And you can see from an astrology chart, was the child really happy that he or she was coming back, or they say, oh no, not that again, and it was a very long and difficult labor. So those things are very clear in the chart. Now, about the time of the transition from this world into spirit, or the passing, that is a very touchy matter in terms of astrology, because it is occult knowledge, and it cannot be judged or stated flippantly or, oh yeah, well, this is what's going to happen to you, because the chart can indicate many different times of transition. And sometimes it's from what we call life to death, and sometimes it's the death of a situation. I don't mean, you know, a pet dying is sad, but as far as a major life trauma or major life event, I should say, it's not always the case. So we have to get very specific. Now, there is a formula, or I should say there's a way to calculate what is called the Heilig, H-Y-L-E-G. And this was a very ancient concept that we've used in astrology for a long time, which outlines the period of time when a transition is most likely. Almost no ethical astrologers will do this because they may be wrong. They may be giving a very, very scary prediction to someone, and the information can be misused. So how does that happen? Well, let's say somebody has a rich old uncle, and they're just licking their chops waiting for the uncle to die. That is not a correct use of the wisdom of astrology or, you know, even the laws of life, so to speak. So this question of when am I going to pass into spirit or when is he going to pass into spirit and make me wealthy has many different ramifications. And you can see in a chart if someone has chosen or that their fate is to die young. Tragedies with very, very young children who incarnated for a week or a month and then went back to the great beyond. All of those things can be deduced from a chart. But in my opinion, life has its own challenges, and the best use of astrology is to help us live well.
Okay. You mentioning the idea that a soul could leave at any point in time, what are the, let me say it this way, do you have a rough idea using astrology when a person is going to die, like roughly, approximately, like
no,
a smaller window?
No, I usually steer, any ethical astrologer will steer clear of that information, unless someone comes to me and their mother or a family member has just gotten a very difficult diagnosis, okay? And in some cases, it's not my most easy or nor my favorite kind of session, it's important for the person to know that anything that needs to be said now, and that most likely the person will pass away. You cannot give a day or a time. You can only say the condition is serious, or you have more time, or better get things in order quickly. And that is, I think, a correct and a worthwhile use of the wisdom of astrology. And sometimes we're surprised. Sometimes we're surprised because something happens very quickly.
Right. And when you look at a chart and you see that astrology, it seems like a combination of parts, that things are always changing. Mm-hmm. Do you have only a certain amount of period within your life to learn certain lessons that you came here to learn? Otherwise, then you just kind of move on to the next life.
No, it's not that rigid. I know people who have lived well into their 90s, and they're kind of astounded that they have. And it seems from their chart they got an extension, you know, like they, filing your taxes, they got an extension. And maybe that was the bonus round, or maybe it was important for other family members to have them alive and to take care of them before they passed. There's all sorts of dynamics, but you can be sure that if you're alive now, and you want, you know, we assume that everybody wants to stay alive, that you have a certain amount of control over the length of your life and, of course, the quality of your life. I had a very, very profound teacher, not an astrologer, but a medical doctor who studied with many, many, many different tribes and knew all sorts of different healing methods. And he was 77 years old, and he told his wife one day, he said, "I had a dream that I was going to die, and there was nothing I could do about it." Well, he was a pretty high-minded spiritual person and meditated a lot, and so they went about their lives, and a week later he died. That was it. So in that case, he was given wisdom and information that he could share with the person he loved most, and it was of benefit. Now, if he had come to me and said, "Well, what about this dream or whatever?" I would have said, "Possible. Only possible, because it's not really my place to say, oh yeah, you're going to die." I mean, you know, it's a tender, difficult subject.
I appreciate that. And Ms. Stelis, when a person is, Let's see this way. Let me start the count again. 3, 2, 1. Is there anything that you can garner from a person who's currently alive right now as to what their next lifetime will be? Mm-hmm. Do certain chart readings give an indication of how many lives they will have, or any indication of what their past life likely was?
For sure, surely. The past lives are, you can trace a whole bunch of them. But the more important fact is which or what from a past life is impinging or gracing the current life. And when it's impinging, it means it's a block. For example, I have a client who is quite a talented writer. I mean, she ghost writes. I mean, she never writes anything for herself or on her own. She's an editor. If you say to her, well, what about this? She'll say, no, you have to do this, that, and the other thing. She fixes things up. She has marvelous ideas. And the way her chart is arranged, she was a scribe, she was a writer, and she was either punished or persecuted for the truth, the writings that she had to offer. And she learned this lesson of, you know, don't let them know what you're doing. So we discussed it a lot because she wants to write. And so she has to get through this block now that she's in this time frame. And nobody's going to come after her, you know, for heresy or anything else. And she should write. So, see, there it is impinging on her current life. And if she can kind of move out of that energy, she will enjoy it.
Okay. Miss Constantelis, the astrophenom, I want to thank you, as always, for your wonderful and very sharp insight. To learn more about Miss Constantelis and to get a chart reading of Miss Constantelis, please go to our website at constantelis.com. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Joining us now is the angel reader, globally respected psychic medium and past life reader, Miss Laura Lynn. You can learn more about Miss Laura Lynn and get a reading with Miss Laura Lynn by going to her website at angelreader.net. Miss Lynn, our focus of today is on death. And curious to know from your perspective, what is the process that occurs when a spirit leaves the body? Where does it go? And what are some of the things that it will likely experience? Are there any common traits of a spirit when it leaves death? When it leaves, goes to death.
Okay, what an interesting way to ask. Okay, so yeah. From my perspective of what I capture from spirit is when the cell, the energy, memory, the consciousness leaves the body, what happens is that depending on where the person is, and this can be if they hold deep regrets or sadness, fears, they can be in a space of, you know, what maybe even Catholic would refer to as purgatory, but basically it's a spot, a holding area of sorts where a person's memories will rush to them. They will see things. They'll have a higher awareness or perception of what perspective of what happened to them and why. And sometimes they can be there for quite some time where they're relishing through the energy, learning, growing, hopefully, and getting to a place of an enlightened state. Now, that's what every soul is really craving, I presume, is for them to remember who they are, to get to a place of remembrance of the particle energy of the great I am, the great creator. And once they get there with that memory that they were created by that great energy, great spirit, then they are in that enlightened state. And that is what we refer to as the light.
And the ones that are having a hard time, making that full transition, I'm curious to know, if they are having a mental imbalance or their brain is, let's say, for whatever chemical imbalance reason, the brain kind of makes them believe that they're here. Do they get an opportunity to have a choice? Do they have an experience? And then, you know, I'm going to do a 3-2-1 countdown on this one.
Okay.
Okay, I totally botched the question. The question I have for you, Ms. Lynn, is this. If a person is experiencing a severe mental disorder and they cannot perceive reality beyond that mental disorder, does that mental disorder in a physical body hold them bound to earth? Are they able to experience a perception beyond that mental disorder once physical death has occurred?
That is a really very interesting thought. And my idea on this is that what happens is that when we're going from the physical to the spiritual, soulful energy consciousness, that we are aligned to, again, that perfected state. See, the truth is, Ryan, we are always perfect. We just don't understand that on the physical resistance of life. We have resistance to that perfection. However, when you do die, your physical body dies, your perfection through consciousness is aligned to the realm where spirit can realize itself. So with that understanding, spirit is allowed or aligned to what the truth is, and the truth is that light is perfect light, it's beauty. So I understand, or I'm perceiving that the energy would not take the mental anguish or mental challenge or any type of disability on into that space.
Okay, and we've done many interviews with you where we talk about past lives, talking about how the soul continues its evolution across many different lifetimes. And my understanding is that sometimes it'll retain some of its qualities, some of its characteristics.
It will.
Let me interrupt you.
It will retain some of the qualities. What will happen is some of the unmastered lessons, the lessons that we came for that we did not master, sometimes we will need to live through them again on our journey because we are choosing to still learn those chapters, if you will.
Do you feel that at some point that a spirit will have to, let's say, melt away any parts of its previous personality from previous lifetimes in order to gain a much more comprehensive lesson from an upcoming life? So say, for example, one lifetime, you happen to be a very charismatic individual, and you've attained all you need to attain from being a charismatic individual. You have these qualities within you that are able to reach out to certain people. Yet in your next life, you need to focus on being a quiet or more inward individual. Do those personality qualities that you've had from that past life have to be completely absolved and melted? And do you lose a total piece of who you really are in order to experience that lifetime? And I guess the question that comes on top of this is, do distinctive personality qualities within an individual hold back their greater evolution because those personality qualities could actually be a deterrent or a stumbling block for what they're trying to attain in future life incarnations?
Well, that's a complicated series of how you projected that. Put that out there. Let me go back to the first part. I do believe that we do attain what we learn, and maybe it's stored just like we compartmentalize in our brain cells now, in our brain now, within the hemisphere. Perhaps the soul itself compartmentalizes what it learns. I do not see a reason to release what was learned. However, if it is not needed in the transition into the next lifetime, that stored bit would be just like that, stored away for later, maybe for future lifetimes. What I'm believing that our whole purpose for life is to experience it in its fullest range, and that we do have purpose to know, you know, lifetimes of being quiet and still, lifetimes of being very rampant and supercharged and driven. And, you know, I believe that every one of these experiences will give us appreciation for, you know, what it is to be completely human. So that's to answer that first question. Now, the second part of it, I don't recall what you asked.
The second part about it was to see if those personality qualities were adherence or deterrence or a stumbling block for future life incarnations, because you retain some of these qualities and you're not able to take fully on a form of an introvert if you've had a very extroverted lifetime.
Yeah, I don't believe so based on what I'm, you know, just and it's just kind of coming to me right now, Ryan. I don't know if I ever really thought that deeply into that particular part of the soul energy, but from what I was just gathering, I don't see how it would be a deterrent. It would be like, again, stored away for future knowledge.
Why is it that certain tragedies may occur that suddenly take the life of someone we love? Why do these things happen? And is there something where that soul knows in advance on a some kind of deep level that they're coming in here specifically to experience that? And if you happen to be a person that doesn't want that to happen, can you make efforts right now at this moment to, let's say, end that particular contract that you have prior to coming in here and say, look, you know, I don't want to die suddenly. I want to live my life and do things a certain way, and I'll experience my evolution on my own terms and not the way that my higher self previously decreed I would experience it.
You know, I don't know the answer to that second part of it. I do recall back when I was younger, I had a really strong idea I was going to die when I was 16. And I prayed about it quite substantially, you know, especially going into my 15th year. I just started praying about it almost daily, and I did it was 2 days before I turned 17. I'll never forget this. I was driving kind of quickly around a road, and I kind of forgot about the whole thing at that point because, you know, I didn't die, but, you know, I did have a couple days left, and I was driving around this curvy road, and I hit my brakes suddenly when I saw deers in the headlight. And I mean, I just barely missed this deer, and it was a pretty kind of a foggy, little bit moisture day, so I did slide. But I you know, I'll always remember that, because I believe the power of prayer did help save my life. I believed it, and I felt like there was some altering that happened at that moment. So I guess yes, there is a way that you can change that contract, and I believe it all comes to free will. I think that's something that God has promised us. You know, I feel a good orderly direction, that there is a free will within that substance, and so it can always be changed. However, I don't know that most people are that aware of what their contracts of the, you know, the soul contract, soul plan contents is. So, you know,
is
I don't know.
Any way we can access that? I mean, if we're,
I see there are
a being.
Yes, there are mediums that can access it very quickly. I'm not one of those that are gifted into accessing future, what's going to be on in the future in that direction as far as soul plan. I can give you some accounts on some positive aspects, but the things that we perceive as negative just typically doesn't come through like that. So, but maybe some mediums do have that, or some, you know, people that are very gifted has that understanding. There is a man named Robert Schwartz that would probably be able to help a person access that.
When a person dies, my understanding is that their spirit goes into a different reality based on whatever is in their heart. And if you live multiple lifetimes, you incarnate multiple lifetimes, I would imagine that there are different parts of your spirit that are in different realities. And the question is, can you actually consult or have access or have communication with the departed spirit of one of your past lives? Is that part of you, because you are an infinite being, is that part of your spirit available to you to consult? Can you actually facilitate a medium communication with one of your own previous past lifetimes, past spirits?
I have done that on several occasions, and it's fascinating, the energy that comes through in that. I was actually haunted by a past aspect of my life. And it took me years and years to understand what was happening.
My understanding is that when a spirit departs, you've lived multiple lifetimes, so I imagine there are multiple parts of your spirit that are in different realities based on what kind of life you lived in your previous lifetime. And the curious question I have is, can you actually consult with the departed spirit of one of your past lives, or most of your past lives? Do the lifetimes of your past lives carry on? The spirit of your previous lifetimes carry on? And can you consult with them, and can you actually go to them for counsel?
The answer is absolutely yes. I have had experience with this. It's a fascinating discovery when you tap into those specters of your life. And, you know, we have to understand that we are infinite beings, and the thoughts and the energy and every moment of our life and our existence is recorded and patterned, and it goes out there on the grid. So we have every moment an opportunity to learn something that is life-changing or that will help our higher awareness to focus on that light, that internal light. And so what the best opportunity for a person to be able to tap in is through meditation. However, it does take deep patience, perseverance, practice in order to do this type of deep information questing regarding your own soul.
Miss Laura Lynn, the angel reader, thank you so much for your great and thoughtful analysis on death, great insight about death. To learn more about Miss Laura Lynn and to get a reading with Miss Laura Lynn, please go to our website at angelreader.net. Thank you so much, Miss Lynn.
Thank you, Ryan.
Joining us now is the clairvoyant cowgirl, psychic medium and empath, Miss Lisa Kaza. You can learn more about Miss Lisa Kaza and get a great reading with Miss Kaza by going to her website at lisakaza.com. Okay, Miss Kaza, what can you tell us about death?
You had to say it like that.
Yeah. I tell people, like, what are you doing your show on this week? Is it about flowers? No, it's death. Death.
Well, the thing is, the way that you say that, though, it's so appropriate, I guess you could say, because, you know, the majority of people on this planet, that's the energy that you put into that, the way you said it, that's exactly how people feel about it. It's dread, you know, they're dreading it, and, you know, and it's scary. And like, even all my years working as a psychic medium and what I do know, I will admit it right here and now, even I'm scared of death. I'm scared of dying. But I think what it is, it's because it's fear of the unknown, partially. And, of course, you know, knowing that you're going to be leaving everyone behind that you love so dearly. So all of this, you know, that's why all the dread and everything else, like I said, even I'm scared of it. But from what I have learned, you know, through the years and, you know, speaking even with a couple of spirits, it's all about, it's just a transition. It's just another phase of, I don't want to say life, but I'll say life of the spirit.
Are there commonalities to when a person like leaves their body? Is there some kind of process where, even though the experience it could be vary in terms of positivity or negativity, is the motion pretty much the same? Do you just leave your body and you just realize you're out of your body? Like, what are some of the common things that happen when you die?
Well, the first thing I have to say is that even though that there's some commonalities between with everybody that are, you know, that have had, you know, near death experiences or what have you. The thing is, I was actually told numerous times by spirit itself that the process and experience of the transition itself is actually quite unique to the individual. So sometimes it's shaped by a person's belief systems, for example, or fear. It depends on how deeply ingrained fear is within them and that kind of. A lot of different concepts come into play. But one thing that I have noticed that every spirit goes through upon transition, and I'm, this is hard to explain because there's no concept of time on that side. So in order to just try to help the human brain understand, I would have to say that within approximately 24 hours upon passing, every spirit goes through what's called a life review.
Okay.
And it's literally just what it is. It's a review of your life. And during that time, you see, apparently you know we get to see everything, we review it all, we ponder over it, we assess it as well. We also voice to ourselves and I guess to divine the lessons that we've learned. And it's almost like having to take a final exam in high school. It's kind of what it feels like. But of course, you know, and it's all to do with the evolution of the spirit, a life review. That's one thing I've found every spirit.
Do you get a chance to see visual stats of certain things that you did in your life? Like, do you get, like, at the end thing, you get to see how many times you pick your nose, how many times, you know, you masturbated, or how many times how many times you drank beer, how many times you came home drunk? Like, do you get, like, a stat sheet? And do you get, like, a pie chart reading of how you actually spent your life? And some people are going to see, like, 85% of the time was on the couch watching TV. I mean, do you actually get, like, stats?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. But the thing is, it's not you're not being graded on it per se, so it's not, you know, it's all about a spirit's learning and evolution. Okay, what did I learn? What do I need to continue learning? What did I experience? What did I not experience? And the thing is, what happens after the life review, and I should say this life review itself, I can't say, quote unquote, how long of a period it lasts for. It could be a matter of an hour to a week to a year. I don't know. I haven't come across any spirits that have taken a year, but I guess it could be. But again, like I said, the concept of time on that side, there is none. So I'm just trying to say, you know, time-wise, you know, the human brain, it has to have concrete answers like that. So, you know, that's why I came out with that number. But after that life review has been completed, the next thing, and this is something else that all spirits will experience, is a decision. A decision will need to be made. What do I want to do next? Do I want to be reincarnated again? If so, when? If so, where? And to whom? And, you know, male, female, animal, am I going to be in it? All of this will then be determined. Or will I ascend higher? Or will I stay here for a while? Maybe I'll become a spirit guide to somebody else. Or maybe I just want to stay here on, you know, a bit of a lower astral plane just to watch over my family members. So that's the next step that I am told everybody goes through.
Well, do you get this option if you were, like, if you get this option if you were a horrific person, if you were some mass murderer, you're some evil person, then they say, okay, here's your life review, and now what do you want to do? And what if the person's like, I want to stay on Earth and keep up my work of tormenting people? Or if you are live one of those lives, do you get thrusted or pulled out of this reality to a different reality that's more of a correlation with the energy that you were presenting in your heart, like, which would be particularly negative?
That's a difficult question to answer. The thing is, it's all dependent on us, or our spirit. We're the ones that make the decisions and the choices, ultimately speaking. If we need to experience being a more negative or dark person, then for whatever reason, because everything happens for a reason, as I always teach, then, you know, quite possibly, it depends. It's hard. They could come back here, or as you say, they could go to another dimension. Right. It entirely depends. It's virtually limitless in terms of possibilities.
Okay, so your spirit can do a number of things, and you decide whether you're going to come back. What is the spirit ultimately trying to do during these life reviews and during these other stages of evolution? What is it trying to do? What is it trying to achieve?
Well, it's trying to achieve balance, firstly, that's the most important, but balance through the wisdom and knowledge of having a human experience, which ultimately allows us to evolve or ascend. That's what our main purpose is here today. We're to learn, to experience, and thus grow, and then pass along wisdom to others. It's like a cycle effect. That's basically what the spirit's here for, to learn.
My understanding is that there are various soul groups that come to Earth and evolve. So you may be one of maybe, let's say, 12 people that are part of a soul group. If a member of that soul group is ready for a different evolution, that is ready to evolve beyond the reincarnation cycle of the physical Earth plane, and Earth, does that person leaving in any way, shape, or form damage or limit the evolution of the collective soul group, or does it change the dynamic of the soul group that's there?
No. If anything, it betters it. It evolves the dynamics of the entire soul group itself, because it's growth. It's a positive growth, no matter how you want to look at it. So if a particular spirit is ready to, as you say in basic terms, move onwards and upwards, that's wonderful. Wonderful for everybody. So, no, there would be absolutely nothing negative about it at all, but in fact quite positive, because everybody, as, you know, even all the New Agers say, we're all one, we're all connected, which I agree with, because we're all part of divine, and we're eternal and limitless. So,
okay,
with the, you know, our basic natures, of course, we too would, you know, in the soul groups that are left behind, would likewise benefit from whoever is ascending.
How can spirits who are no longer in a physical body communicate with a person? What is some of the style of communication? Also, is it very difficult for a person who's gone through the transition and become a spirit to communicate with a person in a physical body? Like, what do they have access to? And what are some of the skill sets or tools they can, I guess, evolve into in terms of being able to better communicate?
Geez, I hate it when you ask multiple questions in one question. I have a small brain.
You got a great brain.
Well, firstly, let's see if I can remember all this now. Spirits can communicate in many different ways. Whether it's, you know, my favorite is in dreams. They will come to you in dreams, and you'll know it's a true visitation when in the dream the person that is visiting knows that they're dead, and they relay on that emotion or will actually say those very words to you in that dream. That's a true visitation. And when you wake up, the emotion is unreal. I've had an experience of that myself, and I can't even explain to you how profound the emotions were. I actually woke up crying. So, yeah. So that's, you know, the first thing. It's one of the easiest, because when you're in the dream state, well, that's the closest state of being. And the easiest state in which spirits, angels, your spirit guides ultimately can communicate with you, because you're in that dream state. Another way is physically, and you know, in our physical world, which does take a lot more energy for them to do, but they can do it. And it can be anything such as manifesting a smell. Like a few times I could have swore to God I smelled my grandmother's perfume or her favorite flower, which was, well, she had two, lilies and tulips. I swear I could smell them. So I knew she was, you know, around. If they want to get a little bit more in your face, I had a spirit here in my house one time that didn't like the fact that my mother was here. So they threw a can of, you know, that Axe body spray?
Yep.
They threw that right across the room and scared the crap out of her. So, but that takes a lot of energy for them to do. But they can.
So
it, can
they, do it. The spirit threw the can?
Yeah. Yep. Right across the room. Picked it up from off of the shelf and just threw it. And it was right in front of her. So she
that would be.
Oh, I laughed. I thought it was funny as all hell. But when you're talking about a person, like going back to your question, you know, a person that's still in the grieving process, it's very hard for them to communicate. Either way, you know, the spirit could be trying to communicate to them, or vice versa. They're trying to connect to, you know, the spirit of their loved one, and it's blocked. And it's because the emotions are way too high. To this day, like, I can't get, because I'm still grieving. It's been, 16 years since my grandmother passed, and I still can't get a solid connection with her because I still have too much of a grief within me. But when you're within a deep state of grief, it's very difficult to get the line of communication open. So I usually recommend for folks to, you know, when they're still in that grieving process, to just allow themselves time and give themselves patience and allow themselves to heal a bit more. And once they find that they've healed more, of course, you can never truly 100% heal from the loss. But, you know, you'll generally know when you're quote unquote ready. The best thing to do is to start a meditation visualization process, and that is the absolute easiest and quickest ways to open up that door of communication and make contact with whichever loved one you want to connect with.
Right, and when you are visualizing them, and if you are sending them love, is that in any way, shape, or form having an impact on their evolution or ability to grow whatever reality or dimension that they're in?
Yes, it does. And the reason why I say that is because quite often, you know, like I have been involved with like hauntings and that kind of thing. And quite often what I found is that there are quite a few hauntings where it was actually a family member recently passed on, or maybe within, you know, like the last 2 years at the most, something like that. Well, what I found is that sometimes the grief in itself is so powerful within those that have been left behind, that the grief in itself holds them here. They're unable to move on. And it's mainly because, they still have emotion. They still care. So there would be worry within the spirit. And so they wouldn't be able to move on. It creates a block. And like I said, it holds them here. So they can't move on. And grief is, and I know some people may get upset with me saying this, but I don't really care because it's true, but grief is a very selfish process. It is. You're not thinking about the spirit. You're thinking of yourself. So you're not in those moments. Of course, you're not sending out that love. You're unable to. And again, this is understandable. It's actually a human process. But once we get through that, get through the grief some, and then just take a few moments to, as you say, send them love, send them light, send them healing, bless them, even say, like, there's some people that hold anger towards them for leaving. It's a part of the grieving process, one of the steps. There's denial and anger and whatnot. So you get into the anger mode, let go of the anger, and even say something to the effect of, you know, I want you to go to the light. I want you to ascend. It's time to evolve, that kind of thing. Letting go, but letting go with unconditional love. That helps tremendously.
As of right now, can people, are there things that people can do in order to, let's say, prepare themselves better or be in a better position to communicate with friends and relatives when they pass? So they have some kind of, act that they know that they will do in order to reach out to their family and friends. I'll give you one example of this. My means of communicating with family and friends when I am physically gone is you will smell this horrible stench between three-day-old gym socks and sulfur. And that presence, that sudden presence, that you will know that I'm with you.
Yeah, and that if that's the case, then you'll have absolutely no problems in getting the blessings
yes.
to go. To
I'll
get
be communicating. I'll be writing books. Just so you know something, might as well go on your next stage of evolution. No need to visit.
Exactly. Again, that's another difficult question to answer, just simply because you can never be ready. You know, you can never be fully prepared for the passing of somebody. It's still going to jolt you. It's still going to hurt you. But it's hard to answer that. Like, I have to say that you can't really prepare yourself until after you actually go through some of the grieving process. And that's when, basically, I would start. That would be the earliest that anybody would be able to start even considering reaching out and communicating with loved ones. Wouldn't be any time before, that's for sure. But I would actually, meditation and visualization, again, I would actually recommend that. But to meet with, whether it's your animal guides, your spirit guides, your angels, that kind of thing, get used to getting into that meditative state, get used to doing the visualizations without, you know, you can't force things. That's the key thing. You can't force things to move along. Just go with the flow. And that's the best thing that I can recommend, is to start the meditation, visualization, meet your guides and your angels. And once you've accomplished that, then it would be so much easier for when you're ready to communicate with the passed on loved ones. But again, that can't be done until you get through the grief process first.
People say that when something horrible happens, they're like, God has a plan. It's God has a plan. Is that kind of a bunch of crap? Does God really have a plan? Or is that just kind of a way of just, you know, limiting yourself to really examining what happened, or limiting your belief system, or limiting your ability to question something fundamentally mysterious, been mysterious since as long as people have been here?
I would have to say that is a crutch, but not necessarily the way in which that you're trying to imply.
Okay.
I believe that it's not God that has a purpose or anything. It's us. Our higher selves or our spirits are the ones that have the plan or the purpose. And for whatever reason, like, there's so many things that occur that we just don't have the answer to. You know, we ask why. Why did this happen? Why did, for example, one of my best friends get killed in a car accident so suddenly? He was way too young, blah, 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 blah. Well, God has a plan. No. God doesn't have a plan. It was his spirit. His spirit made that choice. And likely that choice had been made long prior to his incarnation into this current lifetime. So
While we're on the subject, is there anything that you can do to change it? I know we're going a little far off, but can you ask yourself and ask your spirit, if you have something like that happening, can you say, listen, you know, maybe we should just renegotiate and just, you know, go in our sleep instead of, you know, going off the cliff?
I like to say that you can.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to believe that you can. I don't have a concrete answer to that. But one message that I got in response to your statement is that, unfortunately, the human mind isn't understanding the concept that was just talked about. Like, it's gotten that's your human mind talking.
Well, I don't know. I always feel like that's it's what the spirit is saying is no different than what human beings are saying by saying, okay, well, it's God has the plan. But then the spirit's saying, well, no, you just have a brain. You don't understand. I think it's the same exact energy reading in that, you know, we should be able to figure this out. And if your brain is capable of more actions and has more power than the strongest computer in the world times 37 trillion, some ridiculous number like that, how can we not be able to come up with a concept or greater understanding of what that is, that it's got to be something that the human mind can understand, or at least have an outline for?
Yeah, well, that's why I said I'd like to believe that that can actually happen. That's why I said that I do believe that it could happen. But I don't – I'm not getting any solid, concrete answers from divine or spirit at this moment. That was the response that I actually got, was that, you know, the human mind is actually – maybe overanalyzing, maybe. I'm not exactly sure, but that was the answer I got. But I'm in agreement with you, you know, personally. I do believe, like, I just have this knowing where I do believe that there is something that, yeah, that we can change things.
Miss Lisa Casa, thank you so much for your wonderful analysis and insight on death. To learn more about Miss Lisa Casa and to get a reading with Miss Lisa Casa, please go to our website at lisacasa.com. Thank you so much, Ms. Casa.
Oh, as always, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Okay, everyone, that concludes part two of The Death Show featuring the Virtues. I love these ladies so much. They're just amazing to work with, and I appreciate their contribution not only to this program, but all the other programs that we've done together. Please stick around for part three, which will feature an introspective discussion with several metaphysical teachers. To learn more about the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, please go to our website at outerlimitsradio.com. Thank you so much for listening.